Oh, I wanted to mention that one year ago was like the very beginning of vaccine rollout. So obviously, despite the fact that we have way higher case counts, we also have a 90 something percent vaccination rate at OU between students and faculty. So that's something.
Yeah, I mean that's I think a very big positive because I remember people were getting pretty sick, very bad flu symptoms when they would have COVID, and now, I've known people who haven't even had any symptoms and they've tested positive, and it's very positive. And I know that there is like also a lawsuit going on where a group of students are suing the university for putting in a vaccine mandate.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. Oh wait, tell you about
Yeah,
it?
tell me
Oh,
about it.
okay.
I
You
vaguely know about
haven't.
it. I vaguely know. I read that article like weeks ago.
Yeah. I just kind of pulling at scraps from what I remember, but I think the A News reported it, and it was like this. It was coming out of this law firm in Cleveland or Akron, and they're suing at a whole bunch of other universities too. I remember someone I used to go to high school with posting on Snapchat or some other social media site that Bowling Green was having a similar lawsuit. Who else was it? Maybe probably Ohio State, but it just kind of seems like, a group of OU students is, I want to say probably between 12 and 16, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Are just coming together and suing the university. I think the case is pro bono too.
I'm looking at the Athens News article right now, that Cole wrote.
Here's one. It was 16 people sue Ohio University over COVID rules. This is from an article by NBC Channel 4. It was the Mendenhall Law Group in Akron. And the suit was brought on December 7th of last year. And it claims that Ohio University and its board trustees lack authority to order those who have not been diagnosed with the disease or have not come in direct contact with someone who has a di who has been diagnosed to wear masks, take weekly tests, or limit activities. So that's coming from that article by Cynthia Rossi. But yeah.
And it seems like their legal basis is based on a bill passed by Governor Mike DeWine last year that went into effect in November that prevents public schools and universities from mandating COVID-19 vaccines until they receive full approval from federal officials.
Huh.
Which I'm not sure exactly what full approval entails. Their problem is not only with the vaccine requirement, but also the weekly testing and the mask mandates as well.
Another thing probably worth mentioning is that, they've still maintained their mask mandate, and they are also kind of, they're not telling you you have to wear certain types of masks, but they're preferring surgical mask, KN95s, N95s.
That's the those are the three.
Yeah.
N95, KN95, and 3-ply surgical masks.
Over cloth masks,
No
neck gaiters.
neck gaiters. That they did actually remove that from
Well,
one of the
yeah.
acceptable things.
Yeah.
But the N95, KN95, and the 3-ply surgical masks are recommended. And anything less than that, but above like a face shield or a neck gaiter, I think, and stuff like that is required.
Yeah. And for people, additionally, in addition to that, people living in a residence hall, a sorority or a fraternity, I think if they're an employee that isn't vaccinated, I was looking at this earlier today, and some other categories of people in the university are required to get weekly testing once again. There really isn't a set date for when, for how long that's supposed to last. I think it's they're kind of playing it by ear, but that's another thing that they did last year at this time with the weekly testing. So,
Yeah, the weekly asymptomatic testing
yep.
through Vault, which they've been doing for, I guess, a year now, probably.
I don't, they didn't require it last semester.
They required it last semester only if you were an unvaccinated student.
Right.
And then I believe before that it was like only if you're exposed, like the prior spring semester 1 year ago. But I can't quite remember.
I remember.
Because at that point, they had the Vault Testing Center set up on the tennis courts over by Ping. Yeah. And I only went there like twice.
No, that was weekly. Until,
was it weekly?
It was weekly until you got COVID. And then you didn't have to do it.
Oh, that's why 90. I only did it twice. Because I had COVID right before the semester started.
Yeah, I only had to do it. I only had to do it for a month because then I ended up also getting COVID.
Yes.
But,
I'm glad that you remembered that because I remember going into the tennis courts like twice, but I didn't remember why.
somebody had to show me where it was because, you know, I was like a new student and I had no idea where the tennis courts was, but that was quite an experience, like having to like, you know, spit into a tube. The tennis court and there's pop music. I think about that a lot. I actually also tweet about that too much, I think.
So there's... let me check the dashboard again just real quick so I have the exact numbers, but I believe it's 90% vaccinated. 91% vaccinated, 9% unvaccinated.
But that's something that, you know, has happened within the past year. Something else, booster shots.
Booster shots are rolling out. Not currently required, but many students are getting them.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure many employees are too. I don't happen to know that many personally enough for them to tell me that they've got their booster shot, but just based on the percentage, it seems to be pretty consistent. It's usually like 80 to 90% across the various demographics of students and employees getting their shots. So I imagine it's roughly the same for boosters, maybe slightly less because it's not required. But yeah, I know many students that have gotten their boosters.
I think like the big part of that is like remembering to put it in because I completely forgot to put my booster in for like...
Oh, to tell the school that you got the booster?
Yeah. I mean, I completely forgot. But like I think that a big incentive for a lot of students, especially on campus students, is that if you have your booster and you're exposed, you don't have to go into quarantine.
Yeah, in accordance with the new CDC guidelines, boosted people only have to wear masks for 10 days, which we already do anyways.
Yeah.
And unboosted people quarantine for 5 days, wear masks for 5 days.
Quarantine has, I mean, isolation. So when you've tested positive, isolation is now only 5 days.
Mm-hmm. It's a little finicky. It's actually like the sixth day you get out.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, they don't just instantly let you out on day five because they have to process the paperwork and stuff. But yeah, it's 5 days, slightly longer depending on the day.
Yeah, probably. That sixth day, that last day, though, when you know you're supposed to be out and you're waiting for them to just tell you you can go, is terrible. It's like, you know, you're staring at your email and it's like...
swiping your card over and over again, it's trying, like, to get out.
Just wanting... It's leading a little too close to home. It's like, I remember sitting in, when I had COVID, I was in Ewing House. I think it's Ewing House.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I wanted to leave so badly because it was like, at that point, my roommate and I obviously both had it at the same time. And we were both like the last, it felt like we were the last two people in that dorm. Because there was nobody else around us. And then the water went out at one point. Like, it was weird.
I'll say the South Green dorms, the back south in particular, has always been a little interesting as far as the functionality goes. And it's very strange that that's where they stick the people who are sick, but it is probably the furthest away from everything.
Yeah, now with the catwalk's gone.
Oh, God. I feel like an old man. Like, back in my day, we used to have concrete catwalks all across the South Green.
My mom was so sad when they took down the catwalks. She was like, you know, I don't even, like, what was the point of that? It's, you know, I think, like, long story short with, like, the COVID stuff, like, you know, everything, it's still a lot of unknown. Like, I feel like you know, this might be a bit opinion, but, like, I feel like everyone is kind of, like, isn't sure what to do next, it feels like, or what's going to happen next, you know?
I think there is a general sense of I don't know if I would I think there's a general, like, feeling of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
about returning to class in full force while the biggest spike in the whole pandemic is happening, even if the variant that we have going around right now is less serious than the other ones.
Yeah.
But it also seems like a lot of the precautions that they have in place are actually working. The COVID dashboard seems to be slowly going back to normal. The first couple weeks were just a lot for them.
Yeah.
You know, with all the students coming back from
different places,
different parts of the whole country and the world in some cases.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Bringing God knows what from their family gatherings. I know a ton of my family got sick over Christmas break.
So much. So my cousin came, one of my cousins lives in New York City, and she came back and she brought back COVID.
Oh God.
And like now, like some of my cousins, other cousins are testing positive for the first time. And like, you know, it's just, you know, I just feel like everyone's kind of getting it.
Yeah.
That's a little grim, but
you know, the way that I look at it is that things have to get worse before they can get better.
Unfortunately, that's the truth.
Yeah. And that seems to be, I'm not trying to, you know, throw any shade at the university, but that seems to be their position as well.
I mean, I think that at this point, in some cases, and you know, this is not to like minimize the people that are dying, because there are people who are being hospitalized and people who are truly, truly sick.
Of course, of course.
But like, you know, there's just not much else you can do at this point other than, you know, try your best to move forward with as minimal, not casualties, but with doing as little damage as you can.
Yep. The only thing at this point is get vaccinated, get boosted, wear your mask, the same stuff we've been doing for a year and a half at this point, or however long it's been, almost 2 years.
It's crazy. I was still in high school.
It just makes me feel so old.
God. Anything else we're missing?
I don't think so. I think that's about it.
Okay.
But you don't have anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and have a good week.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens. Make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time. Welcome to Athens Happens. I'm Bo Kuhn, senior digital producer at The New Political.
And I'm Izzy Keller, digital editor.
Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics.
You can find new episodes on Monday at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded.
This week, we take a look at the current state of the COVID-19 pandemic compared to 1 year ago today. We usually start by saying hi, but since you've never done a podcast before, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Izzy Keller. I am the digital editor of The New Political. I'm taking over for Emily Zeiler as co-host of Athens Happens. I'm from Huron, Ohio, which is by Sandusky. I'm a second year journalism major with a minor in political science. So
I was going to make a joke and say I'm going to make you do an icebreaker on the podcast.
Please make me do an icebreaker. No, I'm kidding.
Like, tell me a fun fact about yourself.
I feel like I give off the vibe that I don't know how to drive a car, but I do know how to drive a car. And I know you can't drive, so I'm not saying that as a flex. But
no,
like,
yeah.
But I feel like, because nobody has ever seen me drive here, so I feel like I always have to tell people that I know how to drive.
I think I'm kind of the opposite, because usually people assume that I drive and I just don't have a license.
Driving sucks. I see the point.
I don't do it.
I hate driving. I'm bad at it. One time I got hit, and it was my fault, of course, but like there was a hole in my bumper, and I drove around like that for probably a year, and people would just make fun of me so much for it.
If you get I'm guilty of this too, but if you get in like a minor fender bender, people will just make fun of you relentlessly.
No,
I do it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, my parents are really happy because it didn't end up on our insurance because the other guy's car didn't get damaged. But yeah.
So to redirect to something a little more serious, a lot more serious, COVID has kind of gone wild since the last episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
With the Omicron variant becoming a thing in the United States and then completely dominating the amount of cases, with the U.S. hitting like a peak of over 800,000 cases, higher than ever in the pandemic, like way higher.
Yeah. I mean, in Ohio, too. I mean, we were, I mean, granted, we were dealing with backlog, but it was what, like,
I don't know. It was
last week, it was
28,000 cases in Ohio 2 days ago.
Yeah. I mean, that's unheard of. I remember when right in the beginning, people were thinking it wouldn't even go above 10,000 cases.
Yep. Yeah. And now 10,000 cases is like little kid numbers.
I mean, that would be like a good day. I mean, we're more almost three times that.
Yep. And 1 year ago today, or 1 year ago from January 17th, so January 17th, 2021, we had 7,000 cases, which was at the time quite a lot, a little bit like below the peak, but still a lot. And now January 17th is like sort of the peak. It appears that the numbers are going back down because, you know, holiday travel is over and that kind of stuff, but it's still very, very high.
Yeah. I mean, 28,000, you know, cases is nothing to, you know, mess with. Neither is 7,000, but, you know, it's
exactly.
Just crazy how things have changed.
Yeah. And we have, like, National Guard being deployed to hospitals across the state, Obelenis included, I believe.
Yep.
For the first time since probably the beginning of the pandemic, as far as I'm aware, which is very scary, but hopefully helping.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they are providing the help that, you know, the Obelenis and other hospitals need in Ohio and other, you know.
I'm sure in other states too.
Areas, of course, yeah.
Because from what I can tell, Ohio, the graph for Ohio seems to be fairly similar to the national graph. So I have to imagine other states are looking very similar at the moment.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we could check the New York Times map too, and you know, it's all of it is the dark purple, and for reference, the dark purple, it means that there's very heavy case numbers, very heavy transmission, and a whole bunch of different states across the United States.
Yep. The only states that aren't basically painted dark purple are very rural states like Montana and Idaho and Minnesota, the like northern area of Minnesota.
Yep.
Which is really something.
And
it's
these
graphs are never pretty, though.
No.
I will say that. They never look good.
I mean, they always look, I don't know if daunting's the right word, but they all look just very dark.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. It's bleak.
Bleak.
The maps can be bleak.
If you're looking at, you know, Ohio, a lot of the high transmission and high case counts are closer to Cincinnati. So that would be Southwest Ohio. And then Southeast is kind of following where we are. Very closely. Athens, it looks like, is the only county in Southeast Ohio that is the dark purple, and we can probably assume that's because of students returning to campus.
Yeah, if you look at the 14-day trend graph on the New York Times website for Athens County, it's like a sharp increase when students come back. So I assume it will taper off as the student body sort of adjusts to being here.
Yeah.
And we're not, you know, dealing with holiday travel and the cases that accumulates and stuff like that.
Yep.
I think it is worth mentioning that 1 year ago when Ohio was posting like 7,000 cases, Ohio University was hybrid.
Yes.
Classes were meeting one time a day, maybe, or one time a week, maybe, in small separate groups for my classes, at least. I had one class that was like divided into two different days and I only went one of them, that kind of thing. And now we're fully quote unquote fully in person. I have some classes that are maybe on Zoom. I don't want to rat anybody out, but yeah. It's very weird.
No, it is. It's, you know, a year ago today, I was like, you know, all my classes were online. You know, I was in my dorm like all day. I remember just like that whole room was like my world. And, you know, like being able to go uptown and go to different, you know, shops or restaurants or whatever was like a big deal. But this semester honestly isn't that different for me. I only have one class that's completely in person. Most of them, I have probably two that are hybrid and then two that are just completely online. Granted, the two that were completely online and the one that's hybrid were planned to be that way.
Okay.
The other one I don't really know about, but
that makes sense. A lot of professors, I think, prefer that format at the moment because it's safer for them and their families. Yeah. I know some professors that have like immunocompromised family members, and you know, they don't want to be near us. Because, you know, no offense to students, but not exactly the best decision makers in the world.
No, I mean, you know, definitely no offense to students. I wouldn't want to be around us really either.
If I could help it.
If I was like, you know, in a position, I mean, maybe even in general, if I wasn't in a position where I'm immunocompromised or I'm caring for immunocompromised people or unvaccinated children or somebody. But like, you know, I think it's probably like that with all schools, but I noticed that some professors want to put their classes completely online or hybrid, and they're just, you know, have been told no by the university because it seems like, you know, OU is pushing kind of like the you're going to be in person,
yeah,
narrative very strongly.
There was a professor in Cleveland, I believe. There was an article written about him, and he was basically saying that he was randomly assigning students grades and he just wasn't teaching because he's retiring at the end of the year, and he views students as, he said, vectors of disease.
Oh my God.
Which, you know, maybe a month or two ago, we talked about an old quote from the beginning of the pandemic where a professor said that students were vectors of death. So it rings very similar to that for me. It's just not good.
No, I mean, you know, part of that, I mean, like in a normal year, people would be getting sick like crazy. Yeah. I mean, I used to always in high school, because I've never been to college when it wasn't a pandemic, but like, you know, when I was in high school, we used to always all get sick at the same times, you know, stuff like that. So I'm sure with, you know, Omicron being as spreadable, transmittable as it is, like, I'm sure it's that times, you know, 10 or 100 or however,
yeah,
much.
I'm sure. I don't really remember too well, but I know there would be like seasonal flu that would go around the dorms and stuff.
The Athens plague,
of course. Yes. Yeah, and we don't really see as much of that anymore. COVID is kind of dominating that area right now.
Yep.
But, you know, as we exit, like, the flu season, which we're on the way out of, the cases will go back down to normal, as, you know, flu cases will, that kind of stuff. Because it's not the same, but it's like they transmit the same way. So we'll get out of the quote-unquote danger zone, the dark purple, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.